than Dame Tully, tattooed and shabby in a T-shirt and tracksuit bottoms, seemed to glow with an almost celestial light.
"Well, I've got things to do," said Fats.
Dane sniggered. Before Andrew could say anything or offer to accompany him, he had loped away. Fats was sure that Andrew would be nonplussed and hurt by his cool attitude, and he was glad of it. Fats did not ask himself why he was glad, or why a general desire to cause pain had become his overriding emotion in the last few days. He had lately decided that questioning your own motives was inauthentic, a refinement of his personal philosophy that had made it altogether easier to follow. As he headed into the field, Fats thought about what had happened at home the previous evening, when his mother had entered his bedroom for the first time since Cubby had punched him. "That message about your father on the parish council website," she had said. "I've got to ask you this, Stuart, and I wish... Stuart, did you write it?" It had taken her a few days to summon the courage to accuse him, and he was prepared. "No," he said. Perhaps it would have been more authentic to say yes, but he had preferred not to, and he did not see why he would have to justify himself. "You didn't," she repeated, with no change of tone or expression. "No," he repeated. "Because very, very few people know what Dad... what he worries about." "Well, it wasn't me." "The post went up the same evening that Dad and you had the row, and Dad hit. I've told you I didn't do it." "You know he's ill, Stuart." "Yeah, so you keep telling me." "I keep telling you because it's true. He can't help it. He's got a serious mental illness that causes him untold distress and misery." Fats's mobile had beeped, and he glanced down at a text from Andrew. He read it, and experienced an air punch to the midriff. "Arf, leaving for good." "I'm talking to you, Stuart." "I know." "What?" "All these posts, Simon Price, Parminda, Dad, these are all people you know. If you're behind all this, I've told you I'm not. You're causing untold damage, serious, awful damage, Stuart, to people's lives." Fats was trying to imagine life without Andrew. They'd known each other since they were 5. "It's not me," he had said. "Serious, awful damage to people's lives." They had made their lives, Fats thought scornfully as he turned into Foley Road. The victims of the ghost of Barry Fairbrother were mired in hypocrisy and lies, and they didn't like the exposure. They were stupid bugs running from bright light. They knew nothing about real life. He could see a house ahead that had a bald tire lying on the grass in front of it. He had a strong suspicion that that was Crystal's, and when he saw the number, he knew he was right. He'd never been here before. He would never have agreed to meet her at her home during the lunch hour a couple of weeks ago, but things changed. He had changed. They said that her mother was a prostitute. She was certainly a junkie. Crystal had told him that the house would be empty because her mother would be at Bell Chapel Addiction Clinic, receiving her allotted amount of methadone. Fats walked up the garden path without slowing, but with unexpected trepidation. Crystal had been on the watch for him, from her bedroom window. She had closed the doors of every room downstairs, so that all he would see was the hall. She had thrown everything that had spilt into it back into the sitting room and the kitchen. The carpet was gritty and burnt in places, and the wallpaper stained, but she could do nothing about that. There had been none of the pine-scented disinfectant left, but she'd found some bleach and sloshed that around the kitchen and bathroom, both of them sources of the worst smells in the house. When he knocked, she ran downstairs. They did not have long. Terry would probably be back with Robbie at 1. Not long to make a baby. "Hiya," she said, when she opened the door. "All right," said Fats, blowing out smoke through his nostrils. He did not know what he had expected. His first glimpse of the interior of the house was of a grimy, bare box. There was no furniture. The closed doors to his left and ahead were strangely ominous. "Are we the only ones here?" he asked. as he crossed the threshold.
Yeah, said Crystal.
We can go upstairs. My room. She led the way. The deeper inside they went, the worse the smell became, mingled bleach and filth. Fats tried not to care. All doors were closed on the landing except one. Crystal went inside. Fats did not want to be shocked, but there was nothing in the room except a mattress, which was covered with a sheet and a bare duvet, and a small pile of clothes heaped up in a corner. A few pictures ripped from tabloid newspapers were sellotaped to the wall, a mixture of pop stars and celebrities. Crystal had made her collage the previous day, in imitation of the one on Nikki's bedroom wall. Knowing that Fats was coming over, she'd wanted to make the room more hospitable. She'd drawn the thin curtains. They gave a bluish tinge to daylight.
"Give me a fag," she said. "I'm gasping."
He lit it for her. She was more nervous than he'd ever seen her. He preferred her cocky and worldly.
"We ain't got long," she told him. And with the cigarette in her mouth, she began to strip. "Me mum'll be back."
"Yeah, at Bellchapel, isn't she?" said Fats, somehow trying to harden Crystal up again in his mind.
"Yeah," said Crystal, sitting on the mattress and pulling off her tracksuit bottoms.
"What if they close it?" asked Fats, taking off his blazer.
"I heard they're thinking about it."
"I dunno," said Crystal. But she was frightened. Her mother's willpower, fragile and vulnerable as a fledgling chick, could fail at the slightest provocation. She had already stripped to her underwear. Fats was taking off his shoes when he noticed something nestled beside her heaped clothes, a small plastic jewelry box lying open and, curled inside, a familiar watch.
"Is that my mum's?" he said in surprise.
"What?" Crystal panicked.
"No,"
she lied.
"It was my Nana Cass."
"Don't!" But he had already pulled it out of the box.
"It is hers," he said.
He recognized the strap.
"It fucking ain't."
She was terrified. She had almost forgotten that she had stolen it, where it had come from. Fats was silent, and she did not like it. The watch in Fats's hand seemed to be both challenging and reproaching him. In quick succession, he imagined walking out, slipping it casually into his pocket, or handing it back to Crystal with a shrug.
"It's mine," she said.
He did not want to be a policeman. He wanted to be lawless. But it took the recollection that the watch had been Cubby's gift to make him hand it back to her and carry on taking off his clothes. Scarlet in the face, Crystal tugged off bra and pants and slipped, naked, beneath the duvet. Fats approached her in his boxer shorts, a wrapped condom in his hand.
"We don't need that," said Crystal thickly.
"I'm taking a pill now."
"Are you?"
She moved over on the mattress for him. Fats slid under the duvet. As he pulled off his boxers, he wondered whether she was lying about the pill, like the watch. But he had wanted to try without a condom for a while.
"Go on,"
she whispered. And she tugged the little foil square out of his hand and threw it on top of his blazer, crumpled on the floor. He imagined Crystal pregnant with his child. The faces of Tessa and Cubby when they heard. His kid in the fields, his flesh and blood. It would be more than Cubby had ever managed. He climbed on top of her. This, he knew, was real life.
8. At 6:30 that evening, Howard and Shirley Mollison entered Pagford Church Hall. Shirley was carrying an armful of papers, and Howard was wearing the chain of office decorated with the blue and white Pagford crest. The floorboards creaked beneath Howard's massive weight as he moved to the head of the scratched tables that had already been set end to end. Howard was almost as fond of this hall as he was of his own shop. The Brownies used it on Tuesdays, and the Women's Institute on Wednesdays. It had hosted jumble sales and jubilee celebrations, wedding receptions and wakes, and it smelt of all these things, of stale clothes and coffee urns, and the ghosts of home-baked cakes and meat salads, of dust and human bodies, but primarily of aged wood and stone. Beaten brass lights hung from the rafters on thick black flexes, and the kitchen was reached through ornate mahogany doors.